Hey everyone, I'm Lisa.
And I'm Nick.
And you're listening to It Takes Two, the podcast where two people take two movies with the same plot or premise and watch and discuss them.
And in this episode, we're covering off White House Down, Olympus Has Fallen, both from 2013.
Absolutely classic twin films.
Yeah.
This is one of those ones. I feel like we don't get asked about this one as much as we did Volcano and Dante's Peak and Armageddon and
Deep Impact.
Deep Impact, yeah. I was going to say Fallen Impact, which is not the name of the movie.
No, there's Olympus Has Fallen.
Oh, no! Yeah, so, but these are definitely, when people think about twin films, these are up there, I think.
Yeah, I remember watching both of them in a row, and I still stand by the statement, even though it's a lower rated, I feel like White House Down is a better movie. Mm. The cast in both these movies is insane.
Yeah, they're great casts. I will say, I've never seen either of these movies before. I always mix them up, because I know that they're the same movie.
They are the same movie.
Yeah, yeah. So I never remember who's in what movie. But the only thing I thought I knew about these movies is that Morgan Freeman is president in one of them. Turns out Morgan Freeman's not president in either of these movies.
Yeah.
He is in one of the movies, but he plays the Speaker of the House of Representatives.
Yeah.
Who in both movies does temporarily become acting president, but Morgan Freeman is not the president, and that's the only thing I knew about these movies going into them, so I knew nothing about these movies.
So starting off, I'm going to talk about the cast, just because,
okay,
you know, they are very similar, and it's going to get very confusing. So, in White House Down, we have Channing Tatum, which is a callback to This Is The End. You've seen that movie.
I have seen that movie.
Which is now unwatchable.
Yes, understandable.
He plays the hero of the story, the John McClane of the story.
Yeah, his name is John Cale.
Cale.
It's just John McClane.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the number one thing to say about these movies is that if you've seen Die Hard, you've seen these movies and a better version of them. Because these are both just Die Hard in the White House.
Yeah. Channing Tatum, Jamie Foxx, Maggie Gyllenhaal, Jason Clarke, Richard Jenkins.
Joey King as Channing Tatum's daughter.
Yeah. James Woods is a bad guy, spoilers. And then the other one, like, it's nuts because you've got the butler man himself, Jared Butler. I opened the plot instead of the cast list.
You've got Aaron Eckhart as president.
Yeah, Two-Face.
Not Morgan Freeman.
No, Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman is in the movie, but Aaron Eckhart is president. And continues to be to the end of the movie, spoilers.
Yeah. Angela Bassett plays a great character. I feel like some of the other characters get very lost in the tone.
It's interesting to me because that role is a woman in both films.
Yeah.
Maggie Gyllenhaal and Angela Bassett. But for Olympus Has Fallen. I'm still mixing them up. For Olympus Has Fallen, it was written as a male character.
Yeah.
And then Angela Bassett was like, I want to work with Morgan Freeman. Put me in the movie. And Morgan Freeman said, I'm only doing this because I want a paycheck.
Dylan McDermott is hilarious.
Mm.
And the two other ones that stand out to me, I'm pretty sure, I'm just going to double check this, aren't two of the actors in Pitch Black?
I'm not sure. Actually, Judd is the president's wife, first lady.
Who plays his partner?
Partner? What do you mean partner? Oh, you mean Jared Butler's wife?
Yeah, yeah, she's in Pitch Black. She plays Fry in Pitch Black, the captain.
What's the actor's name?
Radha Mitchell.
Oh, I'm really familiar with her.
Yeah, so she was Fry in Pitch Black. You've seen Pitch Black.
I was going to say we did it for the podcast, but we didn't. It's the one unreleased episode of the podcast.
Why was it unreleased?
Oh, I don't think we recorded it. We watched, so, the backstory, for those of you who don't remember this, is that we had discovered that Chronicles of Riddick and Kung Fu Panda 2 were the same movie.
Yeah.
And we did do an episode on those. But we had planned to do an episode on the first Kung Fu Panda movie and Pitch Black first. So we watched both of those first.
Yeah.
And then we went, actually, There's nothing to talk about here. These are not the same movie. It's the only time we've watched two movies for the podcast and then turned around and said, actually, there's no episode. There's no episode here.
It was Cole Hauser. He plays, I was going to say Red, but that's his name in Tears of the Children? Tears of the Sun. Tears of the Sun. He plays the bounty hunter. I can't remember his name, but I feel like a fake fan, even though I've seen Pitch Black like 1,000 times.
That's fair.
You know who I'm talking about, right?
Vaguely. I've seen Pitch Black once, okay. Which is 999 times less than you.
You never played Escape from Butcher's Bay?
No, I never played Escape from Butcher's Bay. I've seen Kung Fu Panda a few times.
Yeah, fair.
Who's his equivalent character in Kung Fu Panda?
I don't know, who's the bounty hunter who's trying to return Poe back to civilization because he's a murderer? And who's also addicted to
tigers?
Morphine. What character in Kung Fu Panda is addicted to morphine?
Probably Mantis.
Okay.
Because that's Seth Rogen's character.
Okay.
Anyway,
back to the movies we're talking about. No, I find the relationship between Channing Tatum and Jamie Foxx better. I feel like there is so much Chekhov's gun in both these movies.
Yeah.
Like, okay, massive spoilers for both these movies, because obviously you...
I mean, I've already spoiled them by saying Aaron Eckhart lives to the end of the movie.
You've had, like, 12... 13 years to watch, no, 12 years to watch either of these movies. So Channing Tatum is a terrible dad, but he's like trying to impress his daughter, and he missed out on her flag twirling display as like her special talent. And the fact that it comes up in the movie later on
as like
how to save the White House.
From
being blown up by F-22 Raptors.
And equivalent in the other movie, instead of it being the hero guy's child, it's the president's child.
Yeah.
But in the case of Olympus Has Fallen... So in White House Down, Channing Tatum is interviewing for a job with the Secret Service.
Yeah.
But he's actually a bodyguard for the Speaker of the House.
Yeah.
Whereas in Olympus Has Fallen, Jared Butler was... Secret Service and in the president's detail, and then stepped down because he didn't save the president's wife during a car accident.
Yeah, but he did save the president.
He did save the president. But he already has a relationship with the president and his son.
Yeah.
And again, right near the beginning, there's a sequence of him talking to the child about the fact that he's trained this child to get into the walls and go to a certain point to hide. So that he knows then when he gets into the White House, that's where he's going to find the child. It's like, cool. And like the second it happens, like you don't know exactly how things are going to go down later on, but you're like, okay, well, this is definitely going to come up because why are you telling me that this child has a specific escape route this early in the movie?
Yeah, yeah.
If he's not going to
use
it. Do
you remember when we mentioned this at the beginning of the movie?
It's like... Yeah, it's one of those things that, like, the second it's mentioned, you're like, all right, well, I know what's happening here.
Yeah.
The flag twirling is less obvious when it's brought up that it's going to come up again.
Because I remember we were watching it on the couch, and I was just like, Lisa, Chekhov's talent. And you're like, what did you say? And I'm like, Chekhov's talent. And you're like, what are you talking about? And she, like...
You said it, like, you didn't say it when they mentioned it at the beginning. You said it when she sees the flag towards the end.
Yeah.
So you didn't, like, spoil it for me.
So I have a bone to pick with Olympus Has Fallen.
Okay.
White House Down is believable. Internal corruption within, you know, the Secret Service. A guy who has a, you know, has lost a son in the war and then this current president. America is fueled by the military-industrial complex. Trying to pull out of the Middle East, and, you know, the head of the Secret Service lost his son, who was a Marine in the war in the Middle East, and has, you know, got a tumor growing on his brain that's going to kill him in 3 months, so he's very much like, you know, if I don't do this thing now, it's never going to happen. And he basically just, like, hires a bunch of deranged mercenaries to, like, carry out his plan. John Connor's in there, being a bad guy. And I think he plays a really good bad guy. I can't remember the actor's name. He played John Connor in Genesis, I remember. Where, spoilers, no, I won't even say it.
Christian Bale.
No.
Does he not play John Connor in one of those newer movies?
Yeah, he played it in Salvation.
Right.
Where is it?
I don't know.
What is his name? Lance Redrick's in it. Good old Lance. Anyway, I will find his name eventually. And, like, all of that is believable, especially in this political climate we're currently sitting in. I know this, these movies were sort of aimed around the, like, Obama administration, which is why it's not a shock seeing Jamie Foxx being president.
Yeah, Jamie Foxx was 100% playing Obama.
Yeah.
Like, not even trying to be subtle about it. He's just doing an Obama impression, especially towards the beginning of the movie when he's just being presidential. You're like, oh, that's just straight up an Obama impression.
Yeah. Now, as I turn to recent events, with the North Koreans being deployed onto the front in the conflict between the invasion of Ukraine by Russia, they are not a scary threat when it comes to real battlefields. I understand they're a global threat because they're, you know, they have a dictatorship, and, you know, they're trying to develop ICBMs and nuclear weapons. I understand that from a political point of view, the fact that they are very close on an ally's border with South Korea. And I say ally, I mean ally to the West. And, you know, it's very, you know, they are a threat to their neighbours. The problem is in reality, their troops have been deployed to the front and their troops have been decimated. There are several reasons why their troops have been decimated. Their tactics are awful. There was a triggering thing I'm about to say, so you might want to skip forward a few seconds if you don't like hearing about people getting killed on the battlefield. But they have been known to rush trenches in open cover with no support and just been basically gunned down instantly. I don't understand if this was the sort of Russian command telling them to try and weaken the entrenched Ukrainians, or this was their own tactics, because obviously, you know, how do you get intelligence information from dead people? The fact that most of their troops became addicted to pornography during being transited out of North Korea to the front because they'd never been exposed to the internet. And of course, there was basically like that old adage of, you know, a rat is given two bottles of water in a cage with nothing, and one of them's water and the other one's drugs, and they just keep doing drugs until they died. Having the North Koreans as terrorists who successfully wipe out the White House is all, you know, and they've got all these special tactics. One, you know, they would have left and gone to a McDonald's and been like, oh, crap, the real world's, like, way different.
Mm.
There's quite a political, outspoken lady. I can't remember her name. It's going to drive me nuts now. Watched several interviews with her. She was smuggled out of North Korea when she was quite young. And what she said about the place is horrific. Pretty much any information that gets released out of North Korea is horrific. But this idea that they're able to, you know, take the White House in 13 minutes and all this other jazz of, like, all their tactics is...
Well,
annoyed the shit out of me. I understand why, because, you know, they're not a big market. You can't make it China, you can't make it Russia.
Well, no. I think North Korea was chosen because there was conflict at that time.
Yeah, true.
But like there was tensions between them and the United States at that point in time, which at the moment is a whole other ball game that we won't go into. But the things to consider here are, one, the North Koreans that we see primarily doing stuff in the movie are people who have clearly infiltrated the government in South Korea significantly long enough ago that they can, that they have the trust of the prime minister. And two, that they have people on the inside in the White House who have clearly given them schematics because they know where everything is. They know exactly where to beeline to get rid of security first thing.
Yeah.
They know where the weak points are, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not just like these guys walked out of North Korea today and immediately bombed the White House.
Yeah, I understand.
You know, the implication is this has been planned for a very long time.
Yeah.
They've infiltrated the Secret Service and the South Korean government.
And also flipped one of the previous Secret Service.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, it's not just guys who just came out of North Korea.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's necessarily, but I understand where you're coming from though, especially the guys who are out like in the, you know, the bin trucks that they use for artillery and, stuff, and the people on the ground out there.
And the fact they had a retrofitted American airplane that had basically giant miniguns on each side of it that were just mowing people down the street unnecessarily.
Yeah, that was insane.
Yeah.
That was bizarre that happened.
But, and that was like
that was a distraction.
A diversion tactic as well.
Well, it wasn't just, it was to get the president where they needed the president to be. Because they had the people in with him.
Yeah.
And they needed those people to get access to the room that they bring the president to when there's an assault. So it was to, A, divert from the setup of the rest of the actual attack, but also to enact the plan that got them down into where they needed to be. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, this is dipping into the trivia already, but the Secret Service were consulted for this film.
Right.
And the way the attack goes, I mean, I don't think they would have chosen North Korean terrorists, but the whole way the infiltration happens was what members of the Secret Service said they would do.
Yeah.
To get into the White House. That's what they would do.
Yeah.
Which makes sense, especially if it's a plot where you have a turncoat Secret Service in there. Because he would be saying, well, this is what you need to do to get in. Whereas the other one is just like, guy dressed as a janitor, blows up a bin in the middle of the Capitol.
Yeah. Which then triggers the rest of the stuff because they want to get the president away and
But like that, it's just like there's no, it doesn't make sense for all the guys to be able to bring in all the bombs and weapons and shit really in the way that they do.
It's
they just also, like bypass security without a lot of weapons.
It's also what annoyed me was the fact that they were given intelligence from the inside and then ignored it. With that over-the-top, like, hunter-killer thing that seemed very Terminator, that they just, like, you know, jack up onto the roof and, like, you know, it's just like, oh, it's a super weapon that they just assembled.
Well, this happens in both movies. That's, like, one of the few moments where it's, like, the exact same scene happens in both movies, where the military decide to send in helicopters to take out the guys on the roof. And are warned by the guy on the inside, don't do that, they've got weapons that can take down your helicopters. Yeah. In White House Down, it's javelins.
Yeah.
In Olympus Has Fallen, it's these really heavy artillery machine guns.
Hydra 6 or something.
Yeah, I think that's right, Hydra 6. And in White House Down, they're like, that's not what our intelligence says. And it's like, listen to the guy who's physically looking at it.
Yeah.
And in the other one, they're just like, no, no, we can take those down. And it's like, you know, you can't.
Yeah.
And then in both cases, the helicopters get shot.
Yeah.
And fall and blow up on the White House grounds and in parts of the White House and explode part of the White House.
I tell you what the major difference between these movies are.
What?
One of them has a car chase and the other one doesn't.
Wonderful to have a car chase in a movie set in a house.
Were like, no, Olympus Has Fallen is more realistic because they called the car in White House down Ground Force One. But it's really called The Beast.
It is called The Beast.
I know.
Again, like I said, they actually consulted Secret Service for Olympus Has Fallen.
That's a Googleable thing, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They just decided to make a joke of it, I guess, in the other one. There is certainly an impactful car scene in Olympus Has Fallen because there is a car accident ? That the wife dies in.
Yeah.
Wait, you're saying ooh? Listen, the guy who is Secret Service, who joins the North Koreans and gives them the blueprints to the White House and gets them in, is with the rest of the Secret Service and I was gonna say the royal family, the first family, I guess that's what they're called, at their like cabin, and he elects to stay behind at the cabin when the rest of them go. And then suddenly there's a car accident that almost kills the president and does kill the first lady.
Interesting.
And you're like, And it's quite unclear exactly what happens, how the accident happens, really. Because it all happens quite fast. And it's, you know, it's snowing, it's low visibility. Actually, they're on a bridge. You're quite
right. They're on a bridge over water. And then something hits the windscreen and smashes it out and they crash.
Yeah. And the guy that we know is a traitor elects not to come with them and to stay behind. He's like, oh yeah, I'll be fine here. That's Why doesn't he want to go with them?
That's interesting.
Had you never considered that?
No.
It was like instantly suspicious to me. And then when it was revealed that guy was the bad guy, I was like, oh right, he instigated that. He knew that, or at the very least, he knew that accident was going to happen.
The other thing that annoyed me about that scene is the training that those people get, like, they're designed to, like, those vehicles are designed to take gunfire, like you see in White House Down.
Yeah.
So, he wouldn't have reacted and just instantly crashed, like, they're not normal. They've got advanced driving training. Yeah,
but it is happening in very heavy snowfall, so there is, like, their car would skid and, you know, and it's been planned. I mean, it's coincidentally happened, I guess, on a bridge.
Yeah.
On an icy bridge. What really annoyed me is that Jared Butler's character, Mike, keeps saying to the president, we'll get you out and then I'll save your wife. And the president's like, no, I gotta save her. If he'd just gotten out, he would have had time to cut her seatbelt and get her out. So, and then he fires Mike, essentially, because he can't look at him because he blames him for his wife's death.
Yeah.
But, like, literally, if he had gotten out when he said it, Mike would have had time to try and get her.
Yeah.
Instead of being like arguing with him for 5 minutes and then going, okay, well, I got to get you out.
Yeah.
That really pissed me off. Also, just the fridging.
Fridging.
For those who don't know the trope of fridging, it's where a male lead character or main character's wife, or sometimes mother, but usually wife, is killed in the opening sequences of a film or revealed to be dead in a flashback. It's the John Wick does it very well.
Yeah.
Because women only exist to further plot along by their deaths. Think Superman's mother, Batman's mother. So many wives. So many wives.
They're gonna kill Martha. What did you say her name?
I was gonna say, still on the DC train, because DC loved to do it. Mr. Freeze's wife is an instigator, right, in that?
Actually, I think that's why Flash destroys several universes, because he travels back in time to save his mum. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. There's so many. I mean, John Wick is a prime example. Not to diss the John Wick movies. I've only seen one, but, like,
and there's five now.
It's all about fridging.
There's five movies.
It's just now. Like, hey, we killed this woman at the beginning, and this guy couldn't possibly have gone and done all the things he did if this woman hadn't died at the beginning of the movie.
It was also they killed his dog.
Yeah, but the reason the dog was significant was because she was a gift from his dead wife.
Yeah.
Giving
him something to love other than his car.
Yeah. But it's a whole phenomenon. Look into it. There are so many examples. There's like a crazy amount of examples. And kind of horrifying when you realize how many movies have a female character that only exists for the purpose of killing her off to further the man's plot.
Is there a woman's version of that?
Is there a woman's version of that? No. Yeah.
Oh, that's what? A shame. We should make a
movie. We should make a movie where like there's like a man who gets killed at the beginning just to send a woman on a thing.
Yep.
Sure.
Okay. Back to the actual movies we're talking about.
Yeah, poor Ashley Judd gets... Ashley Judd gets fridged.
Mm. I really like... all the relationships between the characters in White House Down. And I find it bizarre that Olympus Has Fallen got two more movies in a franchise.
I don't know. I mean, I thought Olympus Has Fallen plot-wise is more thought out. I feel like White House Down is very action and kind of, like, in some parts, silly action.
Yeah, but that's the one...
That's so what you like.
Yeah, because
this is the same as last episode, where you love Fight or Flight because it's just silly action.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love silly action movies.
Yeah, but it's harder to make a franchise out of just this. True. This is a very silly action movie.
True.
It's easier when you're like, hey, here's very plot heavy.
Yeah.
And the plot makes sense.
But the plots are the same.
Oh, yeah, the plots are the same, but the writing of it, you know what I mean? Because also, here's the thing, is that, like, you have these characters who have established backgrounds, and the kind of opening scene is to, like, show you what the relationship between all these characters are. But, like, the one thing that really struck me as vastly different between these movies is the amount of screen time shared between the president and the guy who's saving him. Because in Olympus Has Fallen... we get to see at the beginning, hey, they have this whole background. They know who each other are. And then the president is separate to the guy the whole time. And then, but he hears them say, like, that it's him. And he's just like, because he suddenly knows that, actually, I have a chance of being saved here if it's this one guy. Because I know what he's like, you know, his whole work ethic, his moral code, his, you know, whatever. Whereas in White House Down... they meet for the first time that day.
Yeah.
And the first thing that Jamie Foxx's president knows about John Cale is he lies to children. but then it turns out to not be a lie because it's the daughter says, like, he's going to be on your Secret Service. But A, he did have a job interview that day. So he could have said to him, hey, no, I just had a job interview and she's assuming I'm getting in. Instead... he's like, he just accepts, like, oh yeah, sorry, I lied to her and said I was going to be on Secret Service. But their relationship builds over the movie because they are together for pretty much the whole movie. And then it's, you know, he learns to trust him through the actions.
If you were going to be the audience if you were trying to force feed... because both these movies are unbelievably overly patriotic.
Oh, yeah, they're very, like, American patriotic.
There was so much sad music when the flag falls to the ground in slow motion. It annoyed me so much.
I was kind of, like, laughing in my head, though, because I was trying to think, like, what if there was an equivalent scene with an Irish flag, would I care? And I wouldn't, but also... you know, they do this dramatic, like, the American flag is upside down as it falls because we're in distress. Yeah. If they did that with the Irish flag, it'd be like, oh, the Ivory Coast flag. This isn't Ireland. This is in Côte d'Ivoire.
But, yeah, like, Jamie King's character is bizarrely... what? Joey King's.
Right, okay.
Joey King's
character. I was like, are you saying Joey King or Jamie Foxx?
Joey King's character is hilarious because she's, like, in love with the current president and, like, super patriotic and, like, it's such a weird thing because she's, like, super obsessed with the White House and knows as much as Connor does And it feels very much like Connor and I can't even remember her name. What is her name in the movie?
I've forgotten.
What is her name?
Emily? Is it Emily? I think it's Emily.
Double checking your work there.
You're double checking my work. My work is just memory.
Your work is memory. I can't even see it. Why? Yeah, Emily Kale.
Yeah, Emily Kale.
They
say her name so often in the movie.
Yeah, being a blogger, but she's a YouTuber because blogging apparently is old.
Yeah.
And
I mean, at that time, that feels fair.
And yeah, just the whole like twirling the seal of the president to wave off the F-22s and knowing everything about the White House, and yeah, it's very funny to me.
Yeah.
It's like most people don't have this. Like, that is clearly a sign of something going on with that girl's life. Because most people aren't obsessed with...
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
I was going to say, I wonder if she a National Treasure fan.
If you're saying the National Treasure exists in this universe.
I mean, of course, why wouldn't it? Why wouldn't National Treasure exist in this universe?
Fair enough.
This is from 2013. Both National Treasure movies would have been out at that point.
Okay.
She could absolutely have been a National Treasure fan.
So that you're saying the movies exist in the universe, not that it happened in this universe.
Oh no, not that it happened in that. No, I don't believe it's a shared universe with National Treasure. I'm saying that the National Treasure movies probably exist in this universe, and that this little girl has probably watched them both. Because that's what you would do if you were obsessed with the presidency at age 8 or whatever she's supposed to be.
Is she like 8?
I don't know. That's what I thought. What age do you think she is? She's probably older than that, right?
She'd have to be older than 8 because, this was before, was it before or after YouTube set the guidelines at 13?
True. She was born in 1999, Joey King. Yeah. So she was actually, 14 when the movie came out? So she's probably supposed to be about 12.
Doesn't actually say.
Which means she was alive for both of the National Treasure movies coming out. She could have seen at least the second one in cinema, if not the first.
Cool. What else do you want to cover off? Because there's we could talk ages, but like...
I do think it's funny to think about how Channing Tatum seems to just like dodge bullets by doing somersaults over desks and things in his John McClane outfit. He's literally just in the white tank top and jeans or whatever. Whereas you have...
Well, it must be dress pants, right? Because he was in a job interview.
Oh, true.
Yeah.
Whereas Jared Butler's character is wearing, like, a tactical vest and has, like, a gun with, like, a torch on it and everything. Yeah. And, you know... And knows all the codes to everything because they haven't changed them since he left the Secret Service, which is wild.
As a security professional, that really pissed me off.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, especially, I could understand, like, the bit where he gets into, like, his little locker to get a gun.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, sure, maybe they didn't change the code to that. But, like, the fact that he has the code to shut down the entire security system.
Yeah.
And then also has the code to the safe in the Oval Office that has the president's satellite phone in it.
Yeah.
That's insane. There's no reason for him to have access to those things as an ex-employee.
Also, he not only had the code, his biometrics was still there because he used
biometrics. Oh, yeah, he used biometrics to shut down the security. Yeah.
So they have a...
Delete him from the system, thank
terrible
you.
Terrible security administrator in their organization.
Yeah. But in fairness, that terrible security administrator
did save the president.
Saved the entire United States of America.
True.
Because spoiler
and
alert,
South Korea.
The end game for that movie was that they were going to nuke the entirety of the USA. They were going to blow up every single nuclear bomb in the US where it stands. Which seemed to be killing a lot of people.
Yeah.
that's a one positive for being a shitty security administrator. Maybe they kept him on the books because they wanted him to come back, because he did, like, he was having coffee or whatever with Angela Bassett and talking about coming back maybe and wanting to get back into it, and maybe they had saved it for him, but really that's not what you should do. You should delete him and then make him a new profile. But yeah, it was weird to me that he was able to get into the safe in the Oval Office.
Yeah.
Whereas it makes more sense in White House Down, A, that the secret phone is... Well, I don't know. I think the secret phone in a safe in the Oval Office does make sense. But he also had it... But in White House Down, he had the secret phone in his residence.
Well, he got given it as a gift.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the guy who was...
The bad guy.
The bad guy. And also, like, it didn't make any sense because then, A, he would know about it.
Yeah.
And he just conveniently forgot about
well,
it.
Well, here's an interesting factor for you. You know brain tumors can cause personality changes?
Right, yeah. He is supposed to have a brain tumor in this movie.
So maybe that's part of the thing that was sort of like maybe an idea that the writer put in there just to be like, yeah. Oh, you know. He but wouldn't then have again, normally been a terrorist except for cancer. Cancer is a real bad guy in this
except
movie.
Except that backfires
when his wife is like, oh, yeah. You're doing it for our son. And he's like, yep. And he's just like, well, then kill them all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When the fact that his wife, who does not have a brain tumor, agrees with him and tells him to kill the president.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, why?
Yeah.
No. And he also wants to launch nukes, but he wants to launch nukes... And cause World War III.
Yeah.
Like, he wants to actually launch them and send them to Iran.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Whereas, in White House Down, they would... Or, sorry, in Olympus Has Fallen, I am never going to remember which movie is which.
Okay.
In Olympus Has Fallen, they want to nuke America. And then take over South Korea, I guess.
Yeah. There is the Fallen franchise. When there's London Has Fallen and Angel Has Fallen afterwards.
I don't care about that. These movies are the same.
I don't care.
These
about
movies
that.
Are too much the same movie for me to remember which one is which. Yeah, absolutely.
The white one has a black president. Does that help?
I thought they both had black presidents. So I genuinely, the biggest surprise from these movies for me is finding out that Morgan Freeman is not the president.
Yeah.
It's like what, and also like here's the other thing is that in both movies the power of presidency goes to the Speaker of the House.
Yeah, because in White House Down,
yeah,
the Vice President gets out and is launched in Air Force Two. I'm assuming maybe it's Air Force One, and to 40,000 feet and basically is just hovering above, like doing administrative work.
Yeah.
And in Olympus Has Fallen, the vice president's killed, and then they issue temporary power to the Speaker of the House.
Yeah.
In
White House Down, also, they presume that the president is dead.
Yeah.
And then they know that the VP gets killed. Yeah. Because the plane gets bombed.
Gets nuked. Yeah.
And then... The Speaker of the House gets sworn in as president.
Yeah. Well, it turns out he's a bad guy.
Yes, it turns out he's actually the villain, and the plan all along was to get him sworn in.
Yeah.
So that he could send James Woods his nuclear codes by pager.
Yeah.
Which is such a weird detail.
Yeah.
old
men use old technology. Yeah, what a shock.
But I do love that that's how you find out who the real bad guy is at the end, is that like he's like, wait, someone sent it by pager. The only other person in the United States of America who uses a pager is the secretary or the Speaker of the House, who's now the president.
It's actually funny because talking of that about technology, like Obama went into the White House using a BlackBerry.
Yeah.
Which are very good technology at the time. They were really advanced.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time he left, because it was like the new in thing, right?
Yeah.
When he was elected, it was like the thing. And then he was still using a BlackBerry when he left presidency. And it was all the other touchscreen smartphones were all released. Yeah.
Jared Butler is using a BlackBerry.
Yeah.
In Olympus Has Fallen.
Because they're very secure technology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My dad used to have a BlackBerry.
Right. Like the same era,
yeah, roughly the same era. Yeah. I don't know. For years, he had a BlackBerry for years.
Yeah,
for work.
Yeah,
it makes sense, I guess.
I think they were pretty expensive.
I remember when they came, because he got it. I think when they came out first, and it was like, "What is this weird ass phone that you have?"
Yeah,
because I was like a teenager at the time. I was like, "What the hell is this?" strange phone.
My favorite phones from any movie are the Matrix series phones, because they are like trying to push the technology in a certain direction, which didn't work out. I think it's Reloaded has ridiculous phones, because like I think the Matrix 1 had an actual line of phones.
Right.
They were like, they were basically just trying to, like, Nokia were trying to sell.
Okay.
With like the flip out bit. See, it was a cover that covered the buttons, and that's where you talked into.
Right.
And I think the Reloaded, they built a phone for the movie and then released them to the public, and the phones did terribly because they were like, why would I want this cringe Reloaded phone? Like,
yeah, yeah.
What was your first phone?
Nokia 3410.
What, describe it for audiences who may not.
Like,
was it a brick?
It was brick-like, but it was like smaller. It was when they were getting smaller.
Right.
It was like 2004, I think, the year National Treasure was released. It was like a silver detail, and the body was like a aqua color, like a light turquoise, like an aquamarine.
Mine was a special edition. Oh, who got you the phone?
My parents.
Okay. Mine was a special edition Alcatel One Touch Easy.
Mm-hmm.
That was a promotion with Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
And if you sent in X amount of Coca-Cola things plus $20, they sent you a phone. And my Alcatel One Touch Easy had a bunch of limited edition only on that phone ringtones, which was just the Coca-Cola jingles.
Oh my God.
And I had that for years.
My last phone that I had before I got a smartphone for the first time was one that I won on the radio. I don't even remember what I did. I know that it was a radio. One of my friends was really mad at me because it was a radio station that she listened to all the time and entered competitions on all the time.
Right.
And I never listened to it. But I
and the
I,
one time you did, you
I was a fan of a band called The Blizzards.
Right.
Whose lead singer, Niall Breslin, also known as Brezzy, was on this episode or this, like, was on a talk show or something on this station this time, and I tuned in just for that, and then they did some kind of competition and you could win a phone, and I won it.
Nice.
And I was like, wow, cool.
Oh magic.
Yeah, that's from a different time that I won a radio competition. I've entered radio competitions twice.
Yeah.
And the first time I won a phone, and the second time I won 42 prizes. you don't win anything from competitions if you don't enter them.
So that's true.
You gotta enter some radio competitions and win some cool prizes. I genuinely don't remember what the competition was, though, for the phone. But I did win it.
I remember somebody I think I went to school with in primary school.
Yeah.
Whose whole family's vibe, their whole deal, their whole aura was about entering competitions.
Yeah.
Like, at the beginning of the week, the father would issue out X amount of competitions to each child and member of the family for them to enter. And apparently they won stuff all the time because they were just constantly entering competitions to the point where they, like, never paid for vacations ever.
Oh my gosh.
And, like, I thought about this for years about, like, being that person. And I was like, no, it's way too much effort.
There was a website I used to go on. I can't even remember what it was called now, but it was, like, a website. It was, like, movie-related, I think, or, like, media news-related in Ireland that every week had new competitions you could enter online. And I just entered them just for funsies. I don't remember if I ever won anything on it, but it was like, well, you might as well.
The weird rabbit hole that I went down once when I was temporarily unemployed was the free sample rabbit hole.
Oh, yeah.
Where you just put in your address and your name and they just send you free stuff. And there was like an entire website link and it was just like not available in your area. And like 90% of the stuff I like requested free samples as I've got, and most of it was like weird pet products. I had a lot of cat food. Didn't have a cat. It was just something to entertain myself with. Eat any of it, but like, you know.
I used to do the free entries on Omaze, which does like celebrity experiences or whatever. And you can donate you can donate money and buy entries for like, so buy like thousands of entries by donating X amount, and they all go to like a particular charity or whatever. But they, it's some legal thing where they have to allow you an option to enter for free.
Right.
And I would always go in and get as many entries as you, the maximum number of entries for free on any ones I was interested in. I never won anything. But like, it was always like, you know, we'll fly you to LA to have a vegan dinner with Natalie Portman. And I was like, yeah, hell yeah, I'll do that. I'll go hang out with Natalie Portman. I'm sure she'll bring me to the best, she's vegan, she'll bring me to the best vegan restaurant in LA. Let's go.
42 course meal and everything would be mint and capsicum and the
I'd still be hanging out with Natalie Portman. True. a lot of them were like win a free car. It was either like it was it kind of fell into three categories, which were like celebrity encounters or a holiday somewhere or a free car.
Didn't they set up weird, on that note of, like, websites, wasn't there, like, a big push at one point that every time you opened a tab, it took you to another tab first, and that tab, every time a viewer went to it, they would get money?
I still use Tab for a Cause, what you mean. Yeah. I genuinely still use that.
Does it actually work?
So, with Tab for a Cause, it's every time you open a tab, it generates, like, they have, like, an ads on it, yeah, and those generate revenue that go to a cause of your choosing.
Right.
I must have raised a lot of money for charity this way, because I open a lot of tabs. And I also, what's really annoying is that they made it so that not that they made it, Firefox changed their system situation so that the plugin didn't work to open the tabs, but I found a way around that so I can do it on Firefox and still get the tab counts.
I was going to go on a big tirade about how I hate ads that disguise themselves as news, but anyway, because it makes sense in this whole fake news era and the movies we're talking about.
Yeah.
But we haven't talked about movies in a bit. We were tired of our phones.
We just got hung up on the pager conversation.
You don't hang up phones anymore, which is hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, but you do say that you're hanging them up, which is weird.
Yeah. There's very interesting things that we still hold over.
Yeah.
And there's going to be an entire generation who were born and use the technology with never seeing the original, like...
We're the last generation that like, uses our thumb and baby finger to mime a phone.
Yeah.
When you go to mime a phone, picking up, like, people at home, mime what you would do for, like, if you're miming a phone. If you've got your thumb towards your ear and your baby finger towards your mouth, then you're probably a millennial or older. Because the younger generations just do flat palm to the side of your face, because that's what a phone looks like these days. And that's just crazy to me. I do like the old joke of someone asked, of like,
why did you 3D print the save
symbol? Yes, I was going to say, why did you 3D print the save icon? And it's like, oh no, floppy disks. Floppy disks went obsolete like so quickly that I had a box of floppy disks that I was using for things, and then I never finished using that box of floppy disks because floppy disks just ended. I used to use floppy disks all the time.
It's going with CDs as well.
Oh yeah, like CDs are like most gone.
Things you buy don't have CD.
I don't have a CD drive anymore.
Yeah, most laptops don't.
My last laptop, which I bought in 2014, when I went to buy it, they were like, "Ooh, are you sure you want this one? It's got a CD drive." I was like, "Yeah, I want a CD drive. Like that's what makes this one better than that one." And then sadly, that laptop has mostly passed away in recent years.
There's a funny anecdotic story.
When we started doing this podcast, though, was I doing it? I think I was doing it from the laptop.
Yeah, you were doing it from the laptop. Yeah, that's why there was such a rush to buy the current setup.
Oh, you got,
you were, like, having to delete stuff off your computer.
To record podcast episodes.
Podcast episodes, because there wasn't enough space on your hard drive. And then you lost a hard drive after that, and yeah, we still have to talk about getting network storage at some point, after all the other things we've got to pay for. What I was going to say was, there's an anecdotic story about, because when you register a Windows license, for a new workstation,
yeah.
You are told when you, like, because you've got the boot deep CD,
mm-hmm.
is to make a copy of your operating system. It's like the first thing that Windows used to tell you to do.
Yeah.
So you'd sit there setting up your computer for like an entire day rather than just like plug and play, as you, most things are done now these days. So a company had organized a bunch of these workstations to be put up. And then some young technician who was probably very new in the job, because there's a selection of how you can get the backup of your copy of Windows,
mm-hmm.
like the license, like the physical copy of it, if it didn't come with a station, with a DVD.
Yeah.
And apparently they clicked the floppy drive, the floppy disk option. And apparently with that edition of Windows, which I think was either XP or Vista, it was like 64 drive disks per copy.
Oh, no.
And they'd done an entire workstation rollout of like a couple of hundred units. So they got a pallet of floppy disks from Microsoft delivered.
Oh, no.
Like, what would you do with that? That is not, that is like, you're just like, oh, you're going to delivery for free of just like 100 kgs worth of floppy disks? Yeah. It's like, where the hell do we put these?
So that's what James Woods would have done.
Yeah.
In this movie.
I find a lot of both of these movies, everyone's grandpa typing.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, that's typing with one finger, one at a time. Yeah.
It's how my dad types.
Yeah, which is very interesting because a lot of them came from that era of still using typewriters. But I guess, like, writers pull tend to be quite young people who would have then grown into the computer era.
Yeah.
So it's all... Yeah, because it was a long time where things were done via writer pull. No, it would have been an interesting, very interesting time. But everybody grandpa types in these movies. It's like, you know, slow down while you're giving me stuff, and they're like literally giving him a letter at a time, and he's like, and it's like
Gerard Butler has got 67 seconds to save the United States of America, and they're like, we're gonna give you the code, and then he's like, oh, slow down, I can't. And then he, like, looks at it and he's like, is this correct? And stares at it and it's going like 10, 9, 8. And he's like, oh, I guess I'll hit enter maybe. It's like Jared Butler. Literally the entire United States of America is going to be...
exploded.
Nuclear explosion.
Nuclear exploded.
Press the dang button, you fool.
My favorite was hashtag.
Oh, yeah. He was like, what's a hashtag? And then they're like, I get it. But then they could have also just called it a pound key is what they call it in America. Well, we used to just call it hash.
Yeah.
So it would have been easy to be like, yeah, a hashtag. I guess they just mean hash.
Yeah.
But like, he's like, what's a hashtag? And they're like, shift and three. And it's like, okay. Oh, my God.
So both of these movies had some glorious deaths in them for the bad guys.
Yeah.
And talking of grandpa technology is why how I want to segue into it, because like James Wood's about to blow up everything.
Yeah.
And he's got like 15 seconds to press a one button and then like a fight sequence happens and then he gets hit by a car inside a building and then he's like reaching for the button and then old Channing pops out of the top of the truck and just like miniguns the shit out of him. And I'm like, yeah, you're watching it and you were laughing.
Yeah. I mean, that was definitely over the top.
Yeah. But just like the sequence of like, gets hit by a car and still like, no, I'm still going to detonate the bomb.
Yeah.
Like reaching for the button after being hit by a car. And then it's just like, pop up Gatling gun, minigun, just like gunning him down.
Yeah.
And then the fight sequence when he's like on the radio to him earlier, he's like, you can give up, or the last thing you'll do is I'll stab you in the brain with my knife.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they have a fight. And
then he goes
like,
to break his neck, and then he's like, no, wait a second.
And then
let me stab you in the brain with my knife.
Yeah. Didn't I say Chekhov's brain knife or something when we were watching it?
Chekhov's brain knife.
Yeah.
A lot of Chekhov-ing.
Yeah, like I said earlier. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to move into some trivia, some budgets, and some stuff?
First, because these are both, and also because of the timing, but because these are both movies about political stuff, and because this is being released on the 20-something of September 2025, voting is now open for Bird of the Year New Zealand.
I forgot you mentioned this.
Yeah, I did. I mean, I ran it by you first, so this shouldn't be a surprise. You can vote at birdoftheyear.org.nz, and I would like for everyone who listens to this podcast, if you're listening to this before the 28th of September, which is when voting closes, to vote for Piwowo, the New Zealand rock wren. Because I am the campaign manager for the New Zealand Rock Wren, and I want you to vote for my bird. You can vote for up to 5 birds, so you can vote for 4 other birds that you like. You can have a look and read some stuff about them, but I would love it if everyone who listened to this podcast listened or voted for the Piwowo.
It's going to be my 3rd vote, even though the numbers don't mean anything.
Yeah, the numbers, this year they are all equally weighted. In previous years, they've been weighted based on...
Yeah, so it was like your first vote would get 5 votes, and your second would get 4, and down to your 5th vote, which would get 1, and now they're just all the same.
Yeah, so now they're equally weighted.
Now, if you feel like this is interference in another country's democratic election process... which is frowned upon. Just remember that Stephen Colbert did this.
No, it was John Oliver
did this.
We want Stephen Colbert to do it because we want Stephen Colbert to endorse my bird.
Right.
So if you're listening to this and you go and you look up my bird and it turns out Stephen Colbert is endorsing it, then I have succeeded.
You've already gotten several Lord of the Rings cast members.
Yeah, Sean Astin has endorsed my bird.
Yep.
Ali Astin, his daughter, who plays Eleanor Gamgee, has endorsed my bird. Dominic Monaghan has shared multiple posts and DM'd me about my bird, which is cool. And I am working on getting further endorsements. But so you can join them and vote for this.
You can join the Hobbits.
You can join the Hobbits. Vote for this Hobbit-like bird.
Yeah.
For a little bit of information, they weigh between 10 and 16 grams. They're lighter than a AA battery is the statistic. Their eggs are the size of a 10-cent coin. They are a little green and yellow and kind of olivey-colored wrens that live on the ground and hop around on rocks and nest amongst rocks in the mountains in the Southern Alps, also known as the Misty Mountains for Lord of the Rings fans. And they are critically endangered because of introduced predators like stoats who are getting into their nests and eating their eggs. So we want more awareness for the Piwowo. So vote for them.
It was a statistic you said the other day that was really sad to me. Some doc researchers, the Department of Conservation, had set up some observation posts for the nest because they are up really high. We have been offered, because Lisa is a campaign manager, to go to the South Island and go to one of the trapping areas where they're trying to trap the predators. And I was like joking to make it a natural vacation for us.
Yeah.
And your response was, oh my God, we would have to get work out exclusively to do this.
Yeah.
Because the track the guy does it on, the guy who's offered to take us there,
is a 3-day.
A 3-day, 30 something kilometers in the Southern Alps. Like, this is not like, oh, jump in a van, have a quick wander around for 10, a 15 minute loop track.
Yeah, yeah.
This is like a serious, like, alpine hike thing, camping in the rough. And we're like, maybe not.
Yeah, and sightings have become fewer and fewer. It's estimated the population has declined by 70% in the last 10 years.
Yeah, the fact that none of the nests that they were watching survived.
Yeah, so that was 2013, and that's when they changed their status to endangered.
Yeah.
Yeah, none of the nests survived.
Yeah.
And that include not only were the eggs eaten, the parent birds were eaten as well. Which is incredibly sad. But in areas where there is... So I think in areas where there's no predator control, it's, I think, less than 25% of nests succeed.
Yeah.
Whereas in areas where there is predator control, it's closer to 85% succeed. And also, they're more likely to have 3 to 5 times more eggs.
Right.
So it is entirely doable to increase the population again. It'll just take some funding towards predator control in those areas. Anyway.
Feel free to vote in our...
Yeah. Voting, anyone around the globe can vote. As Nick mentioned, John Oliver got 350,000 people to vote for one bird in 2023. Normally, there's about 40,000 votes total across the whole competition.
Yeah.
As opposed to 350,000 for one bird.
Like, it's a very interesting... Like, it's been going for a while.
This is the 20th year. We're celebrating 20 years of Bird of the Year.
And it's fascinating how many rules have changed because people were, like, literally committing voter fraud.
Yeah, yeah.
We take a very serious democratic election system very seriously in New Zealand.
Yeah, there's been a weird amount of voter fraud in Bird of the Year.
Yeah.
Which is funny. There's even been birds disqualified because of the amount of voter fraud associated with particular birds. Which is insane to me.
That's the fraud bird.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, trivia.
Trivia. So, for White House Down, apart from a couple of shots in Washington, D.C. and one scene shot in a park, all of the filming took place on sound stages in Montreal.
Wow.
With blue screen techniques used to create the world around each set.
And it looks fantastic. Like, they did a really
good job. Oh, yeah, they did a good job. The Oval Office, there are two different sets for the Oval Office. One for stunts and one for dialogue.
Right, yep.
And then the other bit of trivia I had for this, which is actually for both, is that there was a book by an author named Vince Flynn called Transfer of Power, which is a basis for the plot used in both movies.
Wow.
For Olympus Has Fallen... so this, I already mentioned this, but in the special features of the DVD, they mentioned that the attack on the White House was planned by former Secret Service agents who were asked how they would attack it if they were to do it. Also, there's a very convoluted explanation here for saying that the president is a Republican, but I noticed it immediately because he just wears a red tie, which is a pretty good indication. But for further evidence, so there is a room in the White House called the Roosevelt Room, and there's always one of the two Roosevelt portraits hung in relation to the political party of the president. Teddy's portrait is hung as the president of the Republican, and Franklin D. Roosevelt's portrait is hung if the president is a Democrat. We don't get to see that room in the movie, but we see Jared Butler running through hallways in the White House, and in one of the hallways they have the Franklin D. Roosevelt portrait, which means that the one in the Roosevelt room is Teddy Roosevelt, which proves that the president is a Republican president. But also he just wears a red tie, which is a pretty clear indicator to me. They filmed the White House tourist scenes in Louisiana, and the weather was so hot that the representative from the Humane Society insisted that all of the German Shepherds playing canine watchdogs had to stay in air-conditioned vans in between shots. And then the other thing that was on here is that, by definition, the president of the United States cannot be held hostage, which is a problem for both these movies, because the moment that the U.S. president is overpowered and unable to function, they immediately lose the office of president, and it transfers to the next in line.
Right.
Which they kind of do accurately in White House Down, but they don't do it immediately, and they should have done it immediately, basically.
Mm.
Whereas in Olympus Has Fallen, they never actually officially do it. they bring in the speaker and they're like, well, you're kind of...
You're acting
president. Acting, but they don't say the president doesn't have any presidential powers. In terms of budget and box office, the budget for White House Down was $150 million, and the budget for Olympus Has Fallen was only $70 million, so it's half the budget. Box office, White House Down made $205 million, and Olympus Has Fallen made $170 million. So the one that you think is best, which is lower rated, actually made more money overall, but cost more to make. Yeah. So percentage-wise, Olympus Has Fallen was more successful.
Which explains why it had a franchise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, if they're able to keep the budget to half what the other one was, and still be, you know, relatively equally as successful, it's not bad. Yeah. There we go. There's some trivias.
Here's some other trivia. If you go to our website, it takes two. You can join our mailing list.
It takes two.co.nz.
Yeah, sorry, .co.nz. You can join our mailing list. You can join our Discord. You can find places to follow us on social media, including YouTube and Blue Sky.
Yes, true. All right, well, thank you all for listening. Our next episodes will be Halloween related.
Spooktober.
We're coming into Spooktober. Yeah.
Thank you for listening.
Bye.
Vote in the bird year.
Yeah, vote Piwowo for bird of the year.
This ad has been sponsored by the campaign manager.
Yes. No money has changed hands, but the campaign manager is also the producer of this podcast. So vote Piwowo for bird of the year 2025 at birdoftheyear.org.nz. I'll put that link in the description too, or in the show notes. All right, thank you. Goodbye.
Bye.